And we are in the moment on SDPB Radio. It's the December 20th edition. I'm your host, Ken Osborne, and we've gathered the experts to talk tech today. We're going to listen to your thoughts and answer your questions in the Kirby Family Studio here in Sioux Falls. With Exigent is Amos Aesop. Hi, Amos.
Hi, Kent. How's it going?
It's going well, and I apparently don't have the right number dialed up on your...
How about now? Oh, look at that. Ooh, hey. That's nice.
That technology is great when you turn the right thing on.
It is. Technology. We like it. Yeah. We're on it.
Absolutely. We are on technology here. Jeff Litterick joins us from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Peer. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
Great to have you back. And this is going to be an interesting show. We're going to kind of take a look back at the, since it's 2019 and we're going into a new decade, we're going to take a look back at the decade that was, and then we'll kind of dial it forward from there later in the show today. But we are a listener interactive program. If you have a question, we will try to provide that answer. On Facebook, we are simply facebook.com/techradio. You can post your comments, your questions there. Please don't be shy. You can send us a text. It's 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372. And our phone number is 800-852-0214. Twitter users, you can send your questions to @KentSDPB, and the email address is inthemoment@sdpb.org. Amos, we're going to take kind of a look back at the decade that was, just kind of broadening the scope of things a little bit, but there's so much that stands out, I guess, in the top tech of the decade. What do you think made the most impact to you?
To me personally, or just in general?
Actually,
I do have an answer for this one, because I was just thinking this as I was on my way here to the studio. As I was thinking about doing it, I was talking to my vehicle, right? I was asking it to change a channel, because it's quicker for me to tell it the name of the channel than it is for me to twist the knob and hopefully I land on the right number and have to spin back and forth.
And not go in the ditch,
Exactly. And, these days it's just hit a button, say the name of the station, and it goes right to it. And it actually, for whatever reason, I mean, I do this all the time, but today I actually thought about how we do that without thinking about it anymore. We're using voice-activated commands to do things. I guess it probably stems from my neighbor had a van sitting outside their house that had the description of home automation on the side. I don't know what they're getting, but apparently some sort of automation system in there. And that makes me think of all of the home devices that we have, the digital assistants, Siri, Alexa, that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But then with inside our vehicle, and I think that's probably the biggest one, is voice automation for doing so many things that we don't think about anymore. I used to be embarrassed, I don't know if embarrassed is the right word, but it used to be a little bit weird to me to talk to an inanimate object to get something to happen, right? Don't even question it anymore, unless you're in a room full of big room full of people, and you've got 15 people at home for Thanksgiving, and you want to shut the lights off. It's easier to just go flip the switch than scream across everybody's voices to tell Alexa to shut the kitchen lights off.
Or in a business meeting or something
right,
like that.
You prefer
a social situation. Right. Prefer not to do that.
But, yep.
That's Amazon Echo came out around 2014. And that's definitely on pretty much everybody's top 10 list of the tech from the last 10 years, and is that really what started it? What started the voice? It got the things rolling for people to start using the automation and the talking to your car and talking to your phone.
From a technical standpoint, it's not the first, but I think it was the first mainstream, widely accepted, and even then, widely accepted is kind of in air quotes, right?
Okay.
Because I remember getting, as an Amazon Prime member, had the option to order the device, the Echo device, and I didn't even really know what it was, but it was half price, and it was voice activated, and I put in for it, and I was one of the lucky enough to get into one of the first queues to receive one, and received it at the office and put it on my desk. And they're like, wow, that you got one of those? It's really cool. What does it do? I don't really know what it does yet. But that's where we started practicing with it. I'd have people walk by my office and yell at it to tell it to do something and play opera music at volume 10 or something. And so there were humorous parts to it, but it certainly was one of the first to be widely adopted and accepted as not quirky or having to be super nerdy to have something like that. I'm kind of questioning now, though, how long have cars have voice activated stuff? I'm trying to think if there was a voice activated vehicle prior to that. I think there was. I think that's been around a little while longer. Of course, limited in function, right?
My first one was 2008, but yes, you could tell it very limited things.
Yeah.
And it hardly ever worked. I mean, getting your device connected to it wasn't as seamless as it is today.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way. Right. So the rudimentary, I as far as my, when I first started getting into it, it's been a few years.
And I sort of question, will there be a time where interactions with a device are only by voice? That there isn't the ability to turn on the light with the switch? That there isn't the ability to start your car by pushing a button? For me, a person who understands that there are a ton of failures and a ton of hardware areas for a ton of reasons, I always like a physical fallback.
Security reasons?
Well, it could be security reasons, or it could just be reasons that there's a bug. Just this morning, we ran into a significant bug in a piece of hardware that some of our customers use that's been around for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And it's just now starting to crop up, hadn't been seen before. And so knowing that those things come along, you need some sort of physical fail-safe. But in the future, will we still need that?
Well, that's a good question. Jeff, do you think you're still going to need that in the future?
Yeah, no. It's always going to be a mix, and people have been working on some of the stuff, like the voice stuff, since the 80s and 90s, and it just coming around now. So if you believe that, and VR and stuff like that is coming along. So it's kind of, we'll have to kind of wait and see how things go and how things are really driven by the masses. Because looking at that myself, look at the past decade is, the most important thing I had taken out is just the explosion in human connectivity between smartphones, social media, ideas, information flow between people and connecting with other people. It's just exploding like crazy. And a lot of those movements for the next decade are going to drive where we go and what we do and how we do things. So,
okay. Well, here's some other, of the more common top 10 as I read people's lists, and there's, if you go explore on the internet right now, everybody's got a top 10 list or a top 15 or boy, even top 20 or top 30 before 30, they're spinning it a whole bunch of different ways. But starting back in 2010, of course the Apple iPad came out and that sparked a revolution of tablets. And I guess the mindset became you didn't need a laptop or a desktop to kind of get things done. And it sort of, and I'm going to include like Chromebooks and other things in that, because in that sort of revolution, because it sort of brought the edge computing or the cloud, the data, the not having to have a physical thing there holding your data along, I guess is what I'm going to sort of include with the iPad. I don't see, when I look at my traffic-o-meter at work, I don't see a whole lot of folks browsing the web on tablets. It's not as strong as, certainly not as strong as phones, as mobile.
Sure.
And not as strong as desktops and laptops. So there is a percentage out there still doing it. But they are definitely fill a niche for entertainment, and some people have adapted it for business use, and it works, and it works very well.
Absolutely,
for some.
Yeah, we see people coming into the office, whether they're vendors or customers, who are 100% tablet only. You know, they've got the whether it's an Android or an Apple version, they've got the little stylus. I forget what the Apple Pen is it called. Apple Pen.
Yeah,
maybe it's so, that simple.
Yeah.
The iPen. You know, they've got that. They've got a USB keyboard attached to it, so that they can still type with it. But then it quickly slides into a folder or a small briefcase for them. It's not nearly as battery hungry. It's it doesn't require the updates that sometimes we get frustrated with Windows and such. So there are a lot of folks who have gone that direction. Of course, it's limiting, right? You have to be able to put up with the limitations, but there's ways around most of those.
But yes, but it also drives the other big thing that happened this decade, which made these all possible, was the cloud. And that's a nebulous term, but storing your data in the cloud, meaning able to access your data from any place. Those are the devices, along with the cloud, that made, you know, that revolution in that, you know, I can go and access my email from any place. I can go access my files from any place. I don't need to be go into work to access my work files necessarily, right? So, you know, the whole platform of data, wherever you go, your data is with you no matter what, has been kind of a major change over the decade too, and has driven a lot of these tablets and other stuff, because before, you know, you're kind of stuck. If you wanted access to something, you had to go to it. Now you get access from any place and any way you want.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Which by itself then snowballs into another technology advance, which is the advent of the mobile worker, right? In the last decade, the mobile worker has become more and more commonplace, where someone who doesn't go to a specific location to do their units of work for the day, you know, folks who are working out of their house, folks who are working out of airplanes, because you get internet service in airplanes these days, just has totally changed the face of business.
Cloud data and edge and AI have certainly make that top 10 list. They're right there at the pinnacle of it. We do need to take a step aside for just one moment. And when we come back, we will talk a little bit about some other predictions for the future. And certainly remote work will be one of those things that we'll talk about as the war for talent heats up. And we are back in the moment on SDPB Radio. I'm Ken Osborne. We are talking tech with the computer guys. We're taking your questions and comments about the tech in your life, and we're making some predictions and talking about the decade and past in tech. We'd love to hear from you. Send your questions by emailing them to inthemoment@sdpb.org or text 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372. Amos, we ended the last segment talking a little bit about the workplace and remote work, and I guess the technology that's made that easier. We were talking about edge computing, and which, you know, to try to back that up and explain that a little bit, that's less and less big data centers at work, and more of that sort of farmed out to data centers and other places access via the internet, which is the cloud,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
And I love to mention that, you know, the cloud is just somebody else's computer. There's nothing special about it.
That's a great way to put it.
Those data farms are still there. They just, you no longer have to host them within your facility and pay all of the cooling and maintenance and electricity and that sort of stuff. And just having the square footage within your facility in order to maintain those. If you push them off into somebody else's facility and you let them take care of that, you're also letting them take care of any upgrades that need to happen. If you've got capacity issues, if you've got performance issues, that sort of stuff. So it's been a real amazing transformation for businesses that traditionally had large data farms inside their walls.
Absolutely. So that's a prediction that's easy to make for me. John T. Meyer and I talked about that war for talent on a few shows back, which is being able to compete for workers and workers being able to compete for jobs from really anywhere.
Well, certainly if you have a skill that is remotely, if it's technology enabled, right? If it's a skill that you can use from Bangladesh, if you can use it from Tokyo and still work for a company that is based out of San Francisco or heck, Sioux Falls, those jobs are going to be highly competitive. But at the same time, it's also going to broaden the ability for us to be able to find people who can do those jobs, because no longer are you limited to the ads that you put in the local newspaper and hope that it finds the right person. You now can put them on things like, I don't know, does Monster.com still exist these days?
I believe it does.
But things like Indeed. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got the local TV station that's got their employment website. You can advertise it all over the nation and certainly find people who can do things, especially when it comes to programming.
And on the flip side, you can be from Chester or Langford or wherever.
Right.
And if you have those skills, you don't have to be paying the high dollar rent of a San Francisco or a Seattle or Portland and have a big job in tech.
Right.
Absolutely. So that's incredibly exciting. Any other predictions you want to throw out there to talk about?
Well, for me, predictions, I always think of, you know, what are we looking at 20 years down the road? But these things happen so quickly anymore that looking down the road is now a year or 18 months out, right?
Yep.
How are things going to change with 5G? The fact now that data and bandwidth is almost not going to become a non-issue, that the fact that you need the ability to transport these bits and bytes from here to there at one point was a limiting factor. Back in the days when we had dial-up modems, you could only do so much in the course of a day. Then we got to ISDN, and now cable, and now fiber to a lot of people's homes. With 5G coming, the mobile workforce now will have access basically to unlimited data as we know it today, which I can't wait to see what 6 and 7 and 25G turn out to be. But that should change things as well, because bandwidth is really not a constraint anymore.
Right. So the big IIoT and IoT, Internet of Things, all of a sudden everything's talking to everything.
Which, as a security guy, can I throw in a quick make sure your Ring doorbell is secured kind of thing?
Opens new security concerns. I have it written down here.
Exactly. Yeah. If you've got that's kind of been the one that's big in the news, but really any IoT device or Internet of Things device should be secured. In that case, make sure you change the password and make sure you put on two-factor authentication. There's lots of help on Ring's website in order to help with that. Problem is, people have been hacking the Ring systems themselves and can look at your doorbell is probably the most frequent one. But Ring also makes an inside camera, right, mm-hmm. where you put it in for like a baby monitor or just monitoring your children's room. And those are, I've seen a couple of YouTube videos of people accessing those devices and then talking to people. And there's not a lot you can do about it without going and disconnecting your internet connection to it. So just make sure that it's secured and that you're aware of what could happen.
Was that a data breach that people got the passwords and the usernames and things, or is it a hackable thing?
It depends on your definition of data breach, right? Was there an issue from Ring or Amazon, who owns Ring themselves? At this point, they're saying no. At this point, they're saying that any access that was gained to those was either by not changing your password, using the default username and password that was on there, or using a username and password that you had used in another location where that had a breach. So a LinkedIn is probably the most prolific one where we see it. And actually, we had a customer that this happened to here just 2 weeks ago locally. And it was a tens of thousands of dollar mistake that their employee made by reusing passwords across multiple locations. And that's what Ring is saying this is. It's saying make sure you change your passwords or use unique passwords amongst multiple devices or multiple accounts and turn on two factors so that if they do get it, they still have to send you that second text message to your phone.
Okay.
And while that is most of the Ring breaches, This was just kind of breaking news yesterday. Last week, a data breach was actually found with about 3,000 to 4,000 Ring accounts, including camera names and everything. The only source could be from a Ring database because it had all the Ring-only information in the breach. So Ring, if you got an email on December 18th from Ring, change your password immediately because your password was found unencrypted along with all your username and all your Ring details.
Wow.
So if you did get that email from Ring, change your stuff immediately and enable two-factor no matter what you do. So.
And the big tip of the day is don't reuse those passwords. We've been preaching that, but not real sternly, I think, for a long time. But that's it's a great time to maybe look into a password manager yep. of some sort, because that's the only way you're going to keep yourself sane.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
if you can't reuse your password on anything, I can. Oh,
yeah.
I think I've got over 200 passwords stored.
Yeah.
That's one of my predictions for the next decade is passwords will be gone before the end of the next decade, and we will be on much more secure biometric and other authentication schemes. You already seen that with, the face stuff with Apple and other phone manufacturers and stuff. Passwords are going to go away. They are going to be replaced through federation and biometric data. It's just a matter of when, not if at this point.
I pray that you're correct. I know the latest update for my Pixel had improved biometric facial recognition algorithms or whatever. So mm-hmm. I'm just hoping it just keeps getting better, and that I know my bank even recognized that and allows that instead of having to put a PIN in or a password.
More and more of my apps that I have don't require passwords. They're just touch the screen, let you in. And that brings along with it its own challenges, right? Whether it's facial recognition or thumbprint or fingerprint recognition, but certainly it is just going to get better from here out.
The downside of the technology, of course, is privacy. China has already passed a law where you must register your face to government facial recognition systems, and they use it massively all over the country. So,
which is
there are downsides to it, but there are benefits also.
Which is why in those protests, you were seeing people wearing full faced covers, not necessarily because there was tear gas or anything. It's just because they have a database of people's faces and would be able to find out who you are. So
government's had my face since I was, 14?
Yeah, that's true,
Since I got my learner's permit. So,
yeah,
yeah, whatever. Well, I hope that's a good thing. Something I thought was a great thing coming down the pike is with the advent of the quantum computing and faster supercomputers, weather prediction is supposed to be getting a lot better. Like a lot better. They can predict snow like 8 years out now, which is a little freaky, but the massive amount of computing power that they can put behind a storm prediction, they can take a look at a storm that's coming in and modeling it. I really think that's exciting. We need to take another short break. When we come back, we'll look at some blunders over the last 10 years, but we'll wrap things up in the next segment of Tech Radio after this. And we're back in the moment on SDPB Radio. It's Tech Radio. I'm Kent Osborne, and we're talking tech with the computer guys. We're taking your questions and comments about the tech in your life. We would love to hear from you. Send your questions by emailing them to inthemoment@sdpb.org, or you can shoot us a text. It's 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372. Just ended the last segment talking a little bit about weather, weather predictions. Deep Thunder is the code name for the IBM supercomputer that's doing all that. And I had to slip that in.
The good thing is that if they make a snow prediction for 8 years out, who's going to remember if they were accurate or not, right? So yeah. let me make a prediction. December 23rd, 8 years from now, we will have snow on the ground.
Well,
we'll see if me or Deep Thunder are more accurate.
I mean, agronomists and other folks have to be kind of excited about that.
That's true. Absolutely. Like
making plans for crops and,
I suppose with rotations and stuff, you probably,
All the different things. It's got to be kind of exciting.
The farther you can go out, I suppose that makes the near term just that much more accurate.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
read a couple of interesting articles. Everybody's talking about how great tech was in the tens. I think you call it in the tens. Yeah,
sure.
In the last decade. Yeah. They spent a little bit of time talking about maybe some of the floppier things, the things that didn't work out quite so well that everybody thought was going to be great. And we talked about many of these things on the show. Google Glass was one of them. Didn't work out so well, although it's making a comeback.
Yeah.
And hopefully, maybe it catches this time. There's enough heads up technology put in it or whatever they need to do to make it appeal to the masses. Was that the problem, mass appeal, or was it?
I think there was a little bit of a fashion issue with Google Glass at the time. Plus, at that time, it was a crazy expensive for what you were getting, and it had limited availability. It was not available. Now this new technology, like I was saying with the Alexa that came out, it was, you could get it for $99 and it was the latest and greatest technology. Well, now what are they? I think you get them free when you buy popcorn from Amazon or something. So,
well, there's so many different versions. It goes from being very stripped down basic models that you plug into things or Bluetooth to things to, the bigger ones that sound really good.
It's just become such a commodity. Yeah, the parts and pieces that it takes to make this technology has become incredibly cheap.
Yeah, I mean, when you see people, Joel, even before he left the show earlier this year, had multiple in his house.
Right.
A gentleman at work I know has, I think he says he's up to, it's either nine or ten in his home.
Yeah.
The unique thing about that is a member of his family has they have some disability issues, so they're more able to get things done by speaking, telling it to turn on lights, start their day, do this, do that.
Sure.
The adaptability is a big factor for some as well. So the reasonably priced makes it even better. Mm-hmm. We didn't get a chance to talk too much about Nest Wi-Fi and things like that on last show. I know you and I started talking about it, but we kind of ran out of time.
Sure.
But that, as the price comes down there, that's going to make it better for Internet of Things devices in your home. So
the fact that they're selling now mesh wireless for home users, that used to be something you would see only in a big technology firm or somebody who was spending lots and lots of money on that. And now it's kind of the go-to. And there must be a half a dozen options available at the local big box store here that I noticed. But those aren't the flops that we're talking about this segment, though, right?
That is not. Well, hopefully. It might be.
Right.
Well, we'll know by the next few years if it is or not.
The flops that come to my mind are all phone-related. Things like the Windows Phone, the Amazon Fire Phone.
Oh, yeah, Fire Phone.
And I didn't have either one of those.
The BlackBerry?
I did have the BlackBerry Storm, which I really liked. That was the one that had the entire screen that was clickable. BlackBerry had this idea that people would never want to get away from that tactile feel of clicking on a keyboard, and so the whole screen would physically push down and in.
Uh-huh.
I liked it. In fact, I got one of the first versions. It was poor, to say the least, and they reissued a newer version, and I got that one as well. But then the last one that I also had was the I call it the exploding phone. The Note 7, the one that you were living on the edge just by carrying it around in your pocket. So I would say that's and that's not, I don't know, that's technology. I guess it is. It's a battery flop, but that was one that was short-lived.
Oh, we have a question from a listener that we'll try to knock out here. I need a basic laptop. We'll only use one or two times a week for personal business records. Lenovo with Intel or Dell with AMD. Both only come with Windows 10. Go online and get programs. Thanks much. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to you as well. And sounds like you're getting a new laptop. I recently am in the new laptop business myself at home, and it's a combination you have on here. Mine is Lenovo with AMD. I got into a Ryzen 5 price break, and it's a heck of a deal with that particular processor and that particular model. It ended up being, with all the promos and everything, was a sub $300 purchase for a larger SSD drive and a very quick, capable computer that's going to last me for years, hopefully.
Yeah.
And do you have any opinions on that, Amos? Lenovo with Intel or Dell with AMD? Those are your choices.
I haven't been in that market for a while. Is there really much of a difference these days between manufacturers? Or, you know, back in the day, I would say, don't go AMD, go Intel for sure. But I don't know that there's even that much of a difference today.
I don't think there is anymore. And the big difference is, are you going to put out the money for the newer generation i7s, i5s, or i3s? That's the question.
I think there's an i9 now.
Okay, for a laptop you're going to use one or two times a week.
Yeah, that's true.
The question is, are you going to put out for the good processor, or are you going to end up with the A line of AMD or the Celeron? They still make those. That's the question, is where is your price break? And anything's going to work. Jeff, did you want to pop in?
Yeah, either one is going to work. There are a little bit of differences between manufacturers and build qualities and stuff. Not much. Dell is being a little bit higher rated right now. It's just quality and QC. But for their purpose, either one would be just fine.
And I'd consider a Chromebook at this point.
I was just going to say, if Heather were on, and she was on, talking tech gifts, big proponent for Chromebooks.
I have an Acer. I forget the model number. It's so old. I've probably had it 5 years, maybe six. Still runs like it was brand new. It is one that is out of. It's no longer receiving updates. Right. Eventually, they have to stop doing that. But it still runs like it's brand new. And for consumption, if you're watching video, if you're surfing the web, if you're reading documentation, as long as you're not storing anything. Or doing anything too graphics intensive, it's a great little machine. I love it, and the battery lasts a really long time. It's very small. It's very lightweight. I would consider a Chromebook if it matches your requirements.
Right, tiny, reasonably, very, very, very reasonably priced. Yep. Will last forever. Fewer security concerns.
Mine has no moving parts. You know, there's no fan. There's no spinning hard drive. There's no nothing. It just runs.
Right,
and right. And someday this will bite us, but no viruses.
Right, yeah. So fewer of concerns about a lot of things. So yeah, consider a Chromebook, and any particular things to stay away from, or stick with the Samsungs, Acers, HPs.
No, in fact, if you'd like
Lenovo's.
To buy my old Chromebook, I'll sell it.
All right. Well.
Almost any Chromebook will go, because Google kind of maintains certain quality assurance on the Chromebooks. They don't even on the Android phones. The only reason probably not to do a Chromebook is you have some business app that you must use that's Windows only. Otherwise, I would go Chrome, and then you're automatically backed up. Your data is up in the cloud, backed up by Google. So if something does happen to the device, you're not going to lose anything.
Great. Well, I think we've stuck a fork in that one.
Yep.
And in just a few minutes left in the show, time for a couple more predictions. Jeff, did you have any flops you wanted to talk about? The Apple charging mat. Remember when everybody was excited about that?
That's coming back around. In fact, the latest prediction is next year or 2021, Apple will actually remove the charging port entirely off their phones, and it will all be wireless. Charging, and I know people that do it and love it, so that's coming back around. Maybe it was just a little bit too early the first time around, but it's coming back.
Yeah, I see the discs on a lot of people's desks now. They just set the phone on and it starts charging.
Yep, the ability to charge a device without having to plug the cable in. You know, for me, I have found that it keeps the connector from wearing out. You know, that putting it in and pulling it out. I've got an Otter case on mine, which has this. Of course, this doesn't work very well for radio,
flap.
But everybody can see the little the little rubber piece that is hanging off that I would have to open up, and then eventually that would work back and forth, and it would fall off. So having a QI, which is the technology, a QI charger, that you can set it on. And then, in fact, this phone actually has a QI charger built into it. So another phone can sit on top of that and take the power out of this phone. So if you've got somebody who's got like 2% left and I've got 98, you can then share that stuff together. Yeah. So it's and it's becoming smaller and smaller. The fact that you can fit a charger inside a phone, I think it's going to be everywhere. It's already making mainstream in the newer vehicles. 18, 19 model years for vehicles have wireless charging.
Set your phone down. I know a couple of years ago I got the vent clip that you set it in there and it started charging wirelessly. Yep. So I suppose the cars are going to catch up.
Yep.
Absolutely. Any other predictions for the coming times? You wanted to anything on the top of your list?
I think the big thing is going to be 5G. Consider getting a 5G next time you renew your phone, and make sure that you're taking advantage of that. It's available in Sioux Falls, Omaha, Minneapolis, select locations.
And it's coming to a, I don't know, multiple towers near you.
Yeah, I think you hit it well too. I think mesh wireless networking is going to be a big thing as well. Make sure you can get wireless at every point in your house.
Okay. Well, that is unfortunately all the time we have for today's show. The last tech radio of the decade. Thanks for spending the time with us. I want to thank my panelists today and remind you that SDPB is always there for you with our app or at sdpb.org. Go there and click on listen.